Well, if you have a Bible with you, I hope you do, let's go to Nehemiah chapter 1. That's where we will, as Vicki mentioned earlier, that's where we will camp out today. The book of Nehemiah, starting out in chapter 1. If you've been with us over the last couple of weeks, or maybe you haven't been able to be with us, I just want to let you know that we've been walking through a sermon series at each of our campuses. And this sermon series has been looking at the lives and the faith of some men and women in the Old Testament. And we've looked at some of these men and women, some of these characters in the Old Testament, and asking the question, how did they really grow in their faith? How did their walk with the Lord grow in depth as well? What are some things that they did to grow their relationship with the Lord? But we've also looked at some examples in the Old Testament of people like King Saul that had an opportunity to grow in his faith, yet he didn't take advantage of that. And it led him to a path of destruction as well. And so we've looked at Esther's life, we've looked at Moses' life, we've looked at Daniel's life. Today, we have the opportunity to learn about Nehemiah, but specifically, how did his walk with the Lord grow and develop? When we think of Nehemiah, sometimes we think of just the wall of Jerusalem, that was kind of the main thing, that he went to rebuild this wall that was on the border of Jerusalem. And that's certainly not a bad focus of his life, but that certainly was not all of Nehemiah's life. Sometimes we just simply look at him as a building contractor or a construction worker. Or we think of leadership when we think of Nehemiah. Certainly not a bad way of looking at his life, but it doesn't describe all of his life. Because what we will see this morning is that Nehemiah was a man who faced what seemed to be an impossible situation in his life. But how he handles this impossible situation shows so much about how his faith grew. We'll put it up on the screen for you. This is our focus this morning, that Nehemiah runs to the Lord in prayer. He runs to the Lord in prayer over the temptation to manipulate and control an impossible situation. I don't know if you're like me. I don't like that statement. Here's why. There are two words in it that are terribly convicting. Manipulation and control. I don't like that, right? But I think we're going to be challenged this morning that this is such a good, healthy place for a guy like Nehemiah to be, but also for us to be, that when you and I face situations in life that seem impossible, and maybe some of you walked into this auditorium this morning, you are staring straight at what feels like an impossible situation. I think there's so much we can learn from Nehemiah of how we run to the Lord and press into the Lord, and we resist the temptation to manipulate and control situations in our lives. So Nehemiah chapter 1. Let's first learn about the man Nehemiah. Before we get into the impossible situation, we need to have some context to his life. Start out in verse 1 together. Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 1. Who was Nehemiah? It says here, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah. Anybody really interested in naming your child Hakaliah? Anybody like, awesome? And now it happened in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year, as I was in Susa, the citadel. It's interesting here because Nehemiah lived in the 400s BC. So put that on your timeline here for a moment. He lived in the 400s BC. There's never a mention in the Bible of the exact year that Nehemiah was born, nor any mention of the year he died. So we don't have a good grasp, or really any grasp, about how old Nehemiah was when this story was written here. But what we do understand is that the book of Nehemiah was a 15-year window in Nehemiah's life. So we get 15 years of his life documented here in the letter that bears his name, but unfortunately we just don't know how old he was during this time. We know that, again, living here in the 400s BC, that he is towards the tail end of the Old Testament. Your Old Testament ends at 400 BC, and then it reopens in the New Testament at the arrival of Jesus, right? That 400-year period between the end of the Old Testament and the beginning of the New Testament is called the 400 years of silence. But we know that Nehemiah lived right close to that 400-year silent period. He was a contemporary of Ezra. He also was a contemporary of Malachi as well. We know that Nehemiah lived in the Persian kingdom, although he was Jewish. Because we know during this time, the Jews had been exiled, and they were now living and operating underneath the rule and the authority of the Persian kingdom. That is the time that Nehemiah's life takes place. We know that he had a really interesting career. He was a cupbearer. If you get down to verse 11 of chapter 1, he states that this was his job. He was a cupbearer to the king. Now, when we think of cupbearer, maybe some of us think of medieval times, but a cupbearer was a very, very precious position within the Persian kingdom. For him to be the cupbearer of the king, it meant that he had a high-ranking position next to the king, but not just a high-ranking position, he was the king's right-hand man, and he was the chief counselor to the king. And for Nehemiah, it meant that he was the chief counselor of King Artaxerxes. His career was good, even as a Jewish person living in the kingdom of Persia, but there was a problem for Nehemiah. Look at verse 2. Look at this problem that he faced. It says that Hanani, one of my brothers, by the way, most believe that was a blood brother of Nehemiah, came with certain men from Judah. And I asked them concerning the Jews who escaped, who had survived the exile, concerning Jerusalem, and concerning Jerusalem. Let's stop here for a moment. We know that the Jews had been exiled. They were living underneath, again, the authority and the rule of the Persian kingdom. But we know there was a remnant. There was a small group of them who had now returned back to Jerusalem. Now, for them to be back in Jerusalem, that meant that Nehemiah had a concern. And what was his concern? He was concerned about how were his people, the Jews, how were they doing, the ones who had actually returned back to Jerusalem? Now, we hear this and we think, oh, okay, that's not that big of a deal, but think about it in this context. From the Persian Empire, the capital city, Susa, to Jerusalem, that was an 800-mile gap between those two cities. Or to put it in perspective for you and I, it would be like us living in Tyler, yet our home was back in Denver. 800 miles from Tyler to Denver. And I know this is going to blow us away in our modern times, but guess what? They couldn't drive there. I know, it's crazy, right? They couldn't fly there, and there was no GPS. How did they ever survive? What was their method of travel over that 800-mile stretch? They had to walk. And now Nehemiah is very concerned about how are my people doing back in Jerusalem? And the word he gets back to, or sent back to him, is found in verse 3. Look at this. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who had survived the exile is in great trouble and shame. So first of all, we know that God's people who were actually back in Jerusalem are experiencing great trouble and shame. Think about it. For 70 years of exile, they longed to be back into their home, but once they got back to their home, it was in ruins. And the people of God were in great trouble and shame, and it says this, the wall of Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are destroyed by fire. So God's people, as they return back home, they're not doing well. And not only are they not doing well, the wall that protected them is completely crumbled. And yet here's Nehemiah, 800 miles back in Susa. And I think he's starting to realize something. We'll put it up on the screen for you here. I think he's starting to realize that Nehemiah was adequately equipped for the political and physical reconstruction necessary for the Jews to survive. I don't think arrogantly he was sitting there thinking, oh, God's going to use me now, but I think he began to realize, I think God has equipped me through my position here in the Persian Empire, the way God has wired me. I think he's adequately equipped me here to help my people survive. So think about it. For Nehemiah, this was a passion for him. When you read the rest of the book of Nehemiah, you learn he was very passionate about being used by God to help serve God's people. He wanted to serve them. He wanted to help them. He saw very tangible needs that they had, and he felt like God would use his life to help meet those needs. But he had a problem. There was a major roadblock between Nehemiah and his ability to actually serve the people of God and serve their needs. What was that roadblock? Well, let me illustrate it in a very, very, very lighthearted way. Years ago, I had an opportunity to fly to Seattle. At that time, we had a partnership with a church plant called Roots Community Church, and Pastor Dave is a dear friend of ours, and we wanted to support this church plant, so I flew out to visit Roots Community and as they were trying to get their church built. And the route that I took flying back took me from Seattle to LAX to Dallas to Tyler. And so I had a bit of a layover in LAX, and so I'm sitting there in the terminal early in the morning, or semi-early in the morning, I guess, and three people walk past me, and I kind of took a double take, and I thought, I think that's somebody famous. I think it's somebody famous. So help me out, church. How many of you would never walk up to somebody famous and, like, introduce yourself? Like, be honest, all right? You're secure of who you are in Christ, okay? How many of you are like, no shame at all, like, hey, man, I'll walk up to anybody, I don't care. How many of you are praying about it at this moment and did not vote, okay? So I see these three people walk by, and again, the double take, and I thought, I think that's somebody famous. I think it's somebody famous. And this is who I realized had just walked past me. He wasn't in that same pose. Just want to clarify. Some of you have no clue who this is. Some of you are like, yeah, I know who that is. Somebody help me out. Who is this? Barry Manilow. Great. Those of you who have no clue, Google it, all right? His life will fascinate you. Barry Manilow here had a couple of hit songs that are pretty cheesy, the Copacabana, Mandy. Obviously not in your Spotify playlist. That's great. So Barry Manilow and his two entourage walk past. And so I had this moment. I don't really care about going and meeting, I guess, somebody who is perceived to be famous, I guess. So I jumped straight up and I thought, I'm going to meet Barry Manilow right now. I'm going to meet him. I left my laptop and luggage right there in LAX. Not the best move, okay? Nobody stole it, by the way. And I jump up, and I realize now, as I turned left, there is a choose-your-own-adventure path. There are three hallways. There's a path to the right, there's a path straight, and a path to the left. I didn't know which path Barry chose in his entourage. So I guess left. I run down with my phone. I run down the hallway, and I see Barry Manilow at the end of the hallway, about to walk through a set of doors that if you walk through those, you have to recheck through TSA to get back into LAX. So I sprint down this hallway. Have I lost the respect of anybody in this room yet, by the way? So I run down this hallway. Right before they're about to walk through a set of doors, I run up behind one of his entourage guys. By the way, all three are wearing sunglasses, because LAX apparently is really bright inside, and I grab the guy's shoulder. I know, right? I'm like, same dude who left his laptop and luggage back at Terminal 21. So I grab his shoulder, and the guy turns around, and I said, excuse me, sir. Good polite East Texan, right? It's probably like, they don't use this in California. I said, sir, can I get a picture of Mr. Manilow? And the guy turned around to me, and he goes, he whispers, oh, no. I'm like, why not? And he goes, it's too early. I'm like, my goodness, what time is it? It was 10 a.m. So I guess Barry's operating hours are not at 10 a.m., all right? Too early is too early, 10 a.m. for Barry Manilow. And the guy goes, no, too early, sorry, man. And then turned and walked away. I was like, all right, remember who I am in Christ. I just got rejected by Barry Manilow, all right? And I think about that in a cheesy way, right? A cheesy way. There was somebody who stood between myself and what I'd hoped for, which really would have been nothing to get a picture with Barry Manilow. That's nothing, all right? My life would have been complete at that point. You think about Nehemiah, though. He had a deep passion. He wanted to do something that was good, church. Something that was good. Something that would have met the needs of other people. God's people. And yet, it wasn't a something that was a roadblock for him. It was actually a someone. Who was it? If you go back to Ezra chapter 4, verse 21, the king of Persia, Artaxerxes, makes a very interesting statement. In chapter 4, verse 21, it says, therefore, or Artaxerxes said, therefore, make a decree that these men be made to cease, and that this city, he's talking about Jerusalem here, this city be not rebuilt. He did not want Jerusalem to be rebuilt. As the king of Persia, he did not want Jerusalem to be rebuilt. He did not want the Jews to have a city that was their city, that was thriving. He wanted it to remain in ruins. And then he adds on this little nugget here, it will not be rebuilt until a decree is made by me. The king had strong opinions about Jerusalem being rebuilt, so strong that he said, it's not going to happen unless I say that it will. That's a problem for Nehemiah. Nehemiah wanted to go back to Jerusalem. He wanted to help rebuild the wall. He wanted to have the city reestablished, but he had a major roadblock between him and doing so, and it was the king. And apparently this weighed on the heart of Nehemiah. Remember in verse 1 of chapter 1? What did it say here? It said, now this happened in the month of Kislev. So Kislev for us is the month of December. If you skip forward to chapter 2, verse 1, and bear with me here, now in chapter 2 is actually the conversation that Nehemiah has with Artaxerxes, the king. And it said here that in the 12th month of Nisan, let's stop here, Nisan is April. Put that together for a second in the context. When did Nehemiah have a passion to go help his people? December. When did he finally have the conversation with the king? April. It took him 4 months before he actually could have that conversation. So what was the problem? What was the roadblock to meeting the needs of God's people? It was not supplies for the wall. It was not even an 800-mile journey. It was the king. It was a person. And here's the point. The point is that Nehemiah's situation seemed impossible because the king stood as an immovable roadblock between Nehemiah and Nehemiah's ability to help his people survive. Think about that. He wanted to help God's people survive, but he had a king standing between him and doing so. And the king was an immovable roadblock for him. I think in life, for you and I, oftentimes the roadblocks that you and I face in life are really not something, but oftentimes it's someone. It's someone who is standing between us and what we want to accomplish. It's someone who's standing between us and what God has called us maybe to accomplish. It's people and the messiness of people that oftentimes serve as roadblocks in life for you and I. I think about for some of you business women and business men. Oftentimes the problem for you is not the product that you're selling. The problem is the people that you're working with are you trying to sell to. For others, oftentimes the problem for you is not the structure of your company, it's the people of your company. For some of you, maybe your issue is not your neighbor's home, it's actually who? It's your neighbor. We have family members that oftentimes are hard to live with and oftentimes serve as roadblocks. And oftentimes when people are roadblocks in our lives, there are certain things in our careers that we can't move forward with, or achievements that we can't achieve. Sometimes people serve as roadblocks and it sucks the life out of us. It makes us restless. And it steals our joy. So here's the question. What was Nehemiah's response then? Because he knew the heart of the king being changed, that is going to be impossible for that to happen. It's going to be impossible. So what was his response? Look at verse 4. Let's look at verse 4 together. What was his response? As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. Now think about it. We just read, how long did he weep and mourn? 4 months. 4 months. I continued fasting and, help me out, church, and doing what else? And praying before the God of heaven. So notice his response here. His response was not, you know what? I'm just going to walk up to the king. I'm going to tell him how it is. That was not his response. His response was, I'll just go to social media and vent. Because that's always a great avenue, informed vent. That was not his approach. His approach was not, you know what, I'm just going to kind of work around the king and I'll take some vacation. He'll never know that I traveled back to Jerusalem. That was not his approach. His approach was, I'm running to the Lord. And specifically, I'm pressing into God through prayer. Through prayer. This reminds me of a quote from the missionary Hudson Taylor. I've been excited to share this quote with you. Because I think Hudson Taylor began to grasp something that Nehemiah did. And I think it's something that you and I, we must grasp as followers of the Lord. This is what Hudson Taylor said. He said, learn to move man through God by prayer. When you have people who are roadblocks in your life, learn to move man through God by prayer. It's exactly what Nehemiah did. He didn't try to work around the king. It's interesting. Max and I talk a lot about this. We have over the last couple of years about leadership. Good, healthy leadership is working through people and leading through people, not leading around people who are difficult. And that's none of you, of course, all right? Okay? But oftentimes in life, when somebody's difficult, we just take the route of, you know what, I'm not even going to mess with them. I'm going to lead around them. I'm going to work around them. And what that oftentimes, what that leads us to do is to manipulate situations or manipulate people. When we don't lead through, but we lead around, it leads us to a place of being passive. We don't address the issues that need to be addressed. And what that leads to is unhealthy relationships. Or when we don't lead through, but we lead around, it begins to build mistrust with people. Or here's the one that I truly hate. when we don't lead through, but we lead around, it leads us to a place of hiding things. Not being authentic. Not being transparent. Not being real. So we hide things. Hudson Taylor said, "Learn to move a man through God by prayer alone." Nehemiah did not try to manipulate the king. He did not try to hide things. He did not try to put all of his chess pieces together so he can accomplish what he wants to accomplish. No, he ran to the Lord, he pressed on the Lord, and he prayed. He prayed, and he prayed, and he prayed for 4 months. So what was his prayer? 3 things we learn from his prayer. Let's look at them. Starting out, verse 5. He said, "O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those whom love him and keep his commandments." The first thing that we learn here in his prayer, number one, is that Nehemiah's prayer right-sized him before God. His prayer right-sized him before God. Did you notice how he started his prayer? What did he call God? The great and awesome God. The great and awesome God. Church, when is the last time that right when you were about to pray, right before you said your first word in the prayer, you just stopped for a moment and you let it sink in exactly who it is you are about to communicate with? Like, when's the last time before jumping straight into prayer, you just stopped for a moment and you considered who it is you are about to pray through, or pray to, excuse me? Because what I think happens is we tend to jump straight in, "Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for the beautiful weather outside. Thank you for the rain, if it's raining that day. God, here's what I need you to accomplish. Get it done by noon." And we treat God as if he's our assistant or a spiritual genie. So we just rub the lamp, he pops out, and then we tell him, "Here are the 3 things I need you to take care of, God." But when is the last time we just stopped and you considered and you pondered, before you even said a word, "The great God, awesome God of heaven, I am about to communicate with. And prayer is simply his grace upon me that I even have the privilege to communicate with the great and awesome God." That's why I say the first thing that we learn from Nehemiah in his prayer is that prayer right-sized Nehemiah. He's facing an impossible situation right now that he himself cannot manipulate, he cannot control, and he runs to the great and awesome God of heaven. Learn from him. Number two, look at verse 6. The second thing we'll learn here is in verse 6, "Let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you day and night before the people of Israel, your servants." Check out this next part. "Confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which we have sinned against you, even," key part, "I and my father's house have sinned." Now, think about the structure of his prayer. He starts it out with acknowledging how great and awesome God is, but then he goes straight into confessing. So here's what we learn. Nehemiah confessed his part in the problem. He confessed his part in the problem. He didn't just give a, "Yes, I only confess the sins of the people," but he said, "Even I have sinned. I've sinned, God." I think what tends to happen when we face situations to where there is somebody who's a roadblock in our life, we tend to think that they are the sole reason why we have an impossible situation on our hands. It's the teacher's fault. It's the coach's fault. It's my spouse's fault. It's my neighbor's fault. It's my parents. It's their fault. It's my roommate's fault. And we tend to think all of it is on them, and we ignore, could it be possible maybe we've played some amount of a role in developing this impossible situation before us? It's really easy to point and shift the blame on everybody else, but that's not what Nehemiah does. He steps back and he realizes, Lord, I need to confess my role in developing this impossible situation. I think about G.K. Chesterton, that he, during his time of living in London, that in the London Times, there was a column that was written, and the column was titled, What is Wrong with the World Today? I'm sure a question that none of us have ever asked, right? Like, how would you have responded to that title? What is wrong with the world today? You probably would have said, okay, I got a list of 10 people. I can tell you they are what is wrong with the world today. Chesterton wrote back to the Times, and this was his response. What is wrong with the world today? Dear sirs, I am. Sincerely, G.K. Chesterton. In other words, he realized, what's wrong with the messed up, broken, sinful world in which you and I live in? I play a role in that. I bring my own mess into this world, my own brokenness. I am a part of what's wrong with the world today. I love that Nehemiah steps back, and I believe in humility, just confesses to the Lord his role in developing this impossible situation before him. Lastly, skip down to verse 10 with me, if you will, 10 and 11. He concludes his prayer, they are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strength, or excuse me, your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant. I think it's really important for us to stop here and just acknowledge the fact that Nehemiah, as he viewed God and he viewed himself as God's servant. He recognizes he's not the master. God and God alone is the master. He is simply the Lord's servant. And he calls himself that. He goes on to pray, and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. What was success for Nehemiah? I think the answer is in the last part of that verse, that God by his mercy would give Nehemiah favor in the eyes of a king who had a hardened heart and had no desire to see God's people rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild that wall and reestablish their lives in the city of God. And his prayer for Nehemiah was, Lord, turn his heart, and would you somehow give me favor with King Artaxerxes? We'll close here, church. I have a question I want to leave us with, a question that I think we need to not run past, but we need to contemplate as we think about the life of Nehemiah and what we've learned this morning from Nehemiah's life. As you face overwhelming circumstances, and maybe some of you face those circumstances in this moment, maybe some of you have come out of overwhelming circumstances, or maybe, dare I say, there is coming a day when you will face overwhelming circumstances. But as you face overwhelming circumstances, are you currently running to the Lord in prayer, like Nehemiah? Or are you seeking to manipulate and control people and the situation? Like, be honest this morning. Have you defaulted to manipulation and control? Or have you run to the Lord as you face impossible circumstances and you've pressed into the Lord, much like Nehemiah, and you said, Lord, I am your servant. You are the great and you are the awesome God of heaven. God, I pray that you put me in the center of your will. I want to follow your will. But Lord, I am praying that if it is possible that you would move this person and you would move in the heart of this person that stands as a roadblock to accomplishing what you want me to accomplish, to be a part of what you want me to be a part of, to be where you want me to be, Lord. Learn to move a man through God by prayer alone. Let's pray together. God, we pause and we recognize right now, Lord, who it is that we are standing before and in the presence of. It is you, the great God, awesome God of heaven, the all-knowing, self-sufficient, all-present, all-powerful, gracious, merciful, loving, active, one true God. Church, I'd love to give you just a moment before the band leads us out in a final song. Just spend time with this God. Like Nehemiah, crying out to him, confessing, surrendering.